Hey everybody, it's the Nobody Likes Casey McClain podcast. This is Casey McClain. It's been a couple weeks of neglect for you folks. And I'm sorry about that, but it's a reality is that my voice, something's going on, folks. My voice is struggling. So if you've listened to the Poor Sports podcast, we haven't missed one there yet, but you've gotten to hear me be very hoarse, and I've just had this like laryngitis inflammation in my throat, and I'll be honest with you, it's been a pretty big struggle for me. I'm not an incredibly like high energy, loud comedian on stage, but I do. When I do change inflection, it's important. And, I feel very hamstrung by my voice right now. I haven't done this podcast. So the last one that came out was the one with Barunji, and I think it came out, how long ago did it come out? Let's see, we can find this out. However long ago it came out, I recorded it 2 weeks before that. So it came out, what day? Come on now, March 23rd. I'm now recording this on April 8th. And Barunji and I recorded, I think, 10 days before that. So my voice still sounded fine then. And then I did Todd Royce's, I did a show with Todd Royce in... what fucking city was that? Anacortes. And the mics weren't working. And I did a lot of yelling to make sure that people could hear. I was trying to be like a, you know, consummate professional. Did a lot of yelling. I wasn't feeling incredible when I went out there that day. I remember my daughter was sick leading up to that. And so after that, and then I think maybe not taking great care of my voice, doing podcasts, doing stuff that nothing like crazy, but like drinking a fair amount and like going out with friends and not really resting my voice the way that I should have. I fucked myself. It was very bad for a while, and it's still not great. It was good for a couple days. And now I'm back to, I feel pretty hoarse. I'm going to try to be more careful this time as I kind of like am into this. It sounds a little bit hoarse. The last time I was, well, so some things have changed in my life since all that went down. It'll change this. We'll get to that in a moment. But I just didn't do a lot to rest my voice. And so here I am. We're going to do this podcast. Also, by the way, I plan on next week. Well, let's get into the big life news of mine, which if you've listened to the Poor Sports podcast from this week already, or from might be last week when you listen to this, this is not going to be new news for you, but I got laid off from my day job on Monday. I was on vacation with my wife. We went to Portland as like maybe the last trip we have before we have our new kid in July. Our new daughter is due in July. So we go down to Portland. It's a place that my wife and I both enjoy. Great food in Portland, by the way. I don't know if I'd say it's an underrated food city. I would tell you this. I think it's a hands-down better food city than Seattle. Seattle's good. I think Portland knocks it out of the fucking water. So I'm out there. I meet up with a former coworker of mine, a now former coworker of mine, and what I didn't know at the time was this was the last possible time we could meet up as coworkers. And we had a couple drinks. I talked through a hoarse voice, had a bunch of whiskey, woke up the next morning. Honestly, my throat and my voice felt better than it has. So the funny thing is, because my wife's so pregnant, I met up with my buddy, my former coworker, at, I think 9:30, because my wife goes to bed about 7:30 right now. So, and I do not, there's I try to do a lot of stuff, subordinate my life to her pregnancy, but I can't do that one. And so anyway, I get Monday morning, I wake up where my wife and I are about to head home after a pretty, I will say, a pretty expensive weekend. We were in a nice hotel, ate out every meal, spared no expense meal wise. I really hate going on vacation and trying to pinch pennies once you're there. Anyway, I get a text from my now former boss that says, "Hey, I'm sorry to bother you. Are you able to jump on a call later?" And I was like, "Oh, that's odd. That hasn't happened before when I've been away." And I go, "Yeah, sure. We're going to be home around 2 p.m. Can you give me some details?" And I received no details. And so then I got home, had my in-laws were watching our daughter. They were over as I'm finding out all this information. My mom was watching our dog. And if you're not aware, I'm sure I've talked about it on this podcast, but it's been a while since I put one out. My mom's leg is broken. So she's like, basically we were like a game time decision whether we were going to be able to do this trip or not, because it was a matter of whether my mom could watch our dog. So she's at our house, my in-laws are at our house, and all this, I discover that there's layoffs happening at my company, and I'm like, oh, fuck. I'm like trying to figure out a way, because my mom has a broken leg, my wife isn't even supposed to lift my daughter into the car, my in-laws are over, there's too much going on, somebody's going to be there when the shit goes down. And I'm believing at this point that the shit's going to go down. So once my in-laws left, I text my boss, now former boss, and I say, "Hey, man, I already know what's going on. Can we just rip the Band-Aid off, get on a call, get laid off, whatever? It's going to be fine. I'm gonna be able to devote a lot of energy towards this kind of stuff for a little while. It's unfortunate for a couple reasons. One, we have this new kid on the way. I'll be completely frank. It's unfortunate because we are entering what will become one of the most expensive periods of our life. Having two kids, having a new kid, giving birth to a child is very expensive. The medical bills are very expensive, even with my wife has good insurance. It's going to be a stressful period. I got a small severance package. I will be able to collect unemployment, it looks like. So it's going to be fine. Things will be fine for a while. And by fine, what I actually mean is we will not only tread water financially, but we will remain at the same level financially for a while. It's going to be fine for a while. And that assumes that I make no headway on, this kind of like live streaming shit. I can't figure out a way to make more money on the internet. An unfortunate reality is that this is also happening at a time when I'm going to be turning the dial down on stand-up quite a bit. So basically I've pledged to my wife that mid-May is the last time I'm going to go on the road. Now, the road can be defined by a lot of things, but it's in my definition in this case, what I'm calling the road is me spending the night somewhere else. But as we get closer to the due date, the window, the diameter of the area I'm willing to travel is going to get smaller and smaller, because if my wife goes into labor, I'd like to be close to home. So I don't have like a date when it's like, this is the cutoff, I'm done doing stand up that day. I did that last time and I regret it. Not the least of which I regret it because people thought I quit stand up. Because I did a show called Casey's Last Show in parentheses for a while. I stopped doing comedy for 45 days. And I don't think that I like lost a ton in those 45 days, but a lot of people, I would like start, they'd see me, you don't see, when you're a comic, you don't see every single comedian all the time. And so I'd see people 2-3 months later and they're like, oh, I thought you quit. I'm glad you started again. I'm like, I never quit. I took a brief hiatus. I took like a paternity leave, a 45-day paternity leave, basically, that was started right before. And then again, by the way, 6 months after my daughter was born, the pandemic started. So I've had some really unfortunate timing on starts and stops in comedy. But my point is, I'm not stopping. I don't have a specific stop date. I think at this point, with all the, you know, what we know about having a kid, though I know we'll all be tired, I'm comfortable with leaving and going and doing an open mic or doing a showcase, having some support in the area. Also, I don't have right now a job to wake up for. And I'll be on unemployment. We can, you know, it's my wife and I don't live a particularly frugal lifestyle, meaning now we can just, I think if we stopped ordering Grubhub and DoorDash, I think we would break even financially. Some things will suffer, that's break even financially with kind of the understanding that now I was putting $250 a month. I was putting a bunch of money into retirement. I was putting $250 a month into my Robinhood account. I was saving a certain amount of money each month. And now some of those things are going to suffer. There's no way around that. Some of those things are going to suffer. We're going to have to pare back our lifestyle a little bit. But it's certainly not, we're not going to be living in poverty. We're not going to be living as paupers because of this. We're going to be fine for a while, like I said. That being said, I would love it. I'm going to move this podcast, the bonus features, over to Patreon. I'm going to try to start out with, at minimum, a couple of live streams every week. In a dream world, if you all make it worth my while financially, I would love to fucking live stream every day. I would love to live stream every day and not have to go back to having a day job. That would be the shit. And also be able to sell tickets here in the Seattle area, but also nationally. How fun would that be, huh? And how fun would it be for you to know you were part of it? But so that's where I'm at. I've got, I'm fighting this voice issue at the same time as I'm losing my job. I got fired on my day off, like Smokey and Friday. It's unfortunate. It's true. It's unfortunate. And we're going to make it through it. Okay. So I'm letting you know that, more so for you to be excited. So please go check out my YouTube channel, because that's all of the live streams will for sure go there. This first one, we're going to try it out on Facebook and Twitter also. I'm trying to figure out how to do it on Instagram, but I'm stupid and I don't really understand. I don't understand what I need to do to make it work on Instagram outside of hoping that Instagram will allow me to do it at some point. Anyway, so there's a lot's happened in this country since I last podcasted. Former President Donald Trump got indicted on charges in New York City. I'm going to give you my summary as I understand it, and you can take from that how from you want, or you can, you know, whatever. Correct me. I don't give a shit. Correct me. I could be wrong on some of the details of this, but my understanding is that Donald Trump was indicted because the way that he classified payments to Stormy Daniels was illegal. And that's because the thought is he made this payment explicitly to... So what makes it a campaign finance violation, my understanding is that he made this payment explicitly to benefit his campaign, but he did it using... through his business account. And his excuse is that he was trying to spare his wife the embarrassment of the whole world finding out that he had fucked a porn star. And so he paid through his attorney, Michael Cohen, and that's an even more complicated thing. He paid her $130,000. But what makes it the violation, as I understand it, is that he used his business funds, his personal business funds, and not campaign funds to benefit his campaign. Which I will say, I think that if he had used campaign funds for that, though maybe not illegal, he would have faced a load of shit, and we all would have thought that seemed crazy. Every liberal would have thought, like, there's no way this should be the way. Nobody would, in their right mind, would think this dude fucked a porn star, and the way to deal with the NDA is to take money that's donated by the American public and spend that money on an NDA. Now, I understand campaign finance laws are what they are for a variety of reasons. I am certainly no legal expert in that matter, but just like from a court of public opinion perspective, or like trying to kind of become, to step away from my own biases against Donald Trump, because I don't like that dude. I think he's a very bad person. I thought he was a bad president. But if I'm being completely honest and principled, I don't think that what he did feels as bad as what the alternative that's suggested he should do is. Meaning, if he had used campaign funds, if he had used the $20 bill sent to him, you know, $130,000 worth of $20 bills sent to him by conservative grandmothers, that would somehow be, we'd all be like, oh yeah, that's the right way to do it. Way to go. Obviously, like, I think people would say the right way to go is to not fuck the porn star, but the man just wanted to support a sex worker. I'm just kidding. I don't know what I also think, like, the chances of, it's funny because what's not being said in this, and I think what is also not being examined, I think it's being kind of, when it's said glibly and ignorantly, is that either Stormy Daniels, this woman who, by the way, has a couple years ago registered as a Republican and ran for office as a Republican, just so you know. But either she willingly fucked an in his 70s, no, I guess it was, he would be in his 60s, but an in his 60s Donald Trump. And we're like, this hero. That's the part that I don't get, is like, we're like, oh, this hero fucked a... People are like, oh, this orange, fat, small dick, little hands, no hair, fucking whatever. Like, they constantly shit on his appearance. And we're like, and Stormy Daniels fucked him like an American hero. It doesn't make any sense to me. So I think that there's a good chance. I don't know if this is true or not, but there's a pretty decent chance that Donald Trump found a way to compensate Stormy Daniels for her time, if you catch my drift. And to me, I don't think that's really a scandal for Stormy Daniels, but that feels like a much bigger scandal for the guy who's trying to be the face of evangelical Christianity in politics, I would think. But I think that these charges, I think one, everything I've read about him suggests that they're pretty weak charges. And I'm not talking about reading fucking Fox News or Breitbart or something like that. Like, the earliest stages of this felt like a weak one, and also one that it's going to be a lot harder to get once the kind of trial starts to happen. I feel like public sentiment is going to be a lot weaker on this than on, like, the January 6th stuff or some of the other stuff that Trump is accused of. And this one, I think, is the one where you could make, it does feel political. Because also, by the way, all the things that he did, the other part of this that people don't know, and again, I'm going to butcher the details of it, is that nothing he did is actually a felony. Let's say he intentionally did this thing, this campaign finance violation. On its own, that's not a felony, but the legal interpretations being used to push this case forward is that he committed these misdemeanors as part of a plan to commit a felony, and that felony was to win the election fraudulently or something. I don't know, folks. It's is it when you get to the end of the charges and you put all the caveats and all that stuff, you're like, it seems like kind of a weak case, to be honest with you. And again, it's like, I don't like this dude. I don't know that I've said on this podcast before that I think the best thing for this country, not for the bloodthirst of liberals, but for this country, would be for if Joe Biden could pardon Donald Trump and Donald Trump would fall away from American politics. I don't think that either of those guys' egos will allow them to do that, but I do think for the unity of this country, that would have been the best thing to do. But now we are where we are. Donald Trump has been indicted in New York. He's his popularity's growing. The Democrats seem to be playing this fucking scary game of like, it's either Trump or whoever we decide to put in front of you. So either you get the bad guy or we're going to pick someone who's probably not that great to represent you, to represent you in the executive office, be that Joe Biden, be that Kamala Harris, be that whoever. It's going to be somebody that they force upon us, and that it feels like they're trying to angle towards forcing voters to choose between a rock and a hard place, to choose between this guy who we find extremely unpalatable, extremely corrupt, his policies are arguably hateful and xenophobic, or a guy who's a lot of those things also, but you know, we'll probably vote a little more in line with what we expect. Okay. So then a couple other things happen with that along these lines that I think have kind of a thing I'm interested in always is the hypocrisy of the vocal minority or whatever. The vocal minority would be, if I was a black comic, vocal minority would be an album title or a special title. So there was 60 Minutes did an interview with Marjorie Taylor Greene. And there was like this, there's this weird thing that happens on Twitter now where everybody like becomes brainwashed and follows this formula that's like, I will never watch 60 Minutes again. It's like nearly or actually copied and pasted from person to person, and it becomes this thing that's like such a drone like behavior where you're like, you're not even really taking the time to think about what you're saying. And people are critical of 60 Minutes for, they call it platforming, Marjorie Taylor Greene. And I guess for me, first off, the woman is an elected official in the United States. It's not Alex Jones. And I would also, by the way, I would say that bringing someone like Alex Jones on to me is not a bridge too far. But the reason, let's go on the Alex Jones thing, which is like a little bit of an extreme example. But the reason I don't find putting Alex Jones on to be so problematic, this idea of quote unquote platforming people to be so problematic, is because it's not like Alex Jones is perpetuating incredibly popular opinions and has a lot of cultural power. When you bring Alex Jones on or you bring Marjorie Taylor Greene on and they present themselves as liars and bigots and xenophobes and corrupt politicians and partisan hacks and, you know, frankly, ignorant and uneducated for the job, it's not converting atheists into believers. If anything, I think what you do is you bring people to your, you bring conservatives over to, I guess that's the by silencing Marjorie Taylor Greene, she becomes a martyr. by allowing her to speak, she's a moron. And people get to see it. I guarantee you there are people who voted for Marjorie Taylor Greene who have no idea what she stands for, who see an R next to her name and say, that's my candidate because I'm a Republican. I vote Republican. Now, is watching 60 Minutes going to turn someone from Republican and to Democrat? I don't know about that. That doesn't necessarily seem realistic to me, but when it, maybe they decide to abstain from voting on that spot on the ticket. It's embarrassing to have voted for, I voted for Hillary and Biden, and I'm fucking embarrassed that those are the two candidates that I felt like I had to vote for. I don't like either of them at all. I think there's a pretty good chance they're gonna perpetuate views that are closer aligned to mine than Donald Trump, but I think they're going to be a long way off of what I actually want out of this country still. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I find this idea that I guess, I mean, you watch the interview, and I guess I should have used some of the live streaming software for this, but you watch the interview with Marjorie Taylor Greene, and she looks like a fucking buffoon. And the clips that I think have made her look bad that I've seen, because I didn't watch the whole interview, I will admit, but the clips that I find are not compelling in this like, don't platform her because that will spread bigotry and hatred and whatever. That argument, the clips that I have seen have been from people who were angry that she was allowed to say that on TV. And you watch these clips and this woman is just a fucking dolt. And that's not helping her. She's been able to grow into this like deeply partisan lunatic because she gets to basically operate in the shadows. Doing this 60 Minutes interview is such a small thing compared to the stuff that she's been accused of over the course of her time in office. It's a nothing. If there's anything that interview does, it'll be her going on TV and looking like a moron isn't convincing people to become more racist, I don't think. Also, and I'll say this, I can't remember the name of the journalist that interviewed her, but people were shitting on her for doing the interview. And while she didn't push back like in an incredibly hard way, she was trying to, I do think, I mean, literally they're fact-checking Marjorie Taylor Greene on screen. She's saying, I didn't do this. And then on screen, they'll show where she did it. You know what I mean? Like it's, this is, if anything, it's exposing her as more of a liar than I think a lot of people knew. Also, I'm sorry for clearing my throat into the mic, but also this idea that like she's going to go on this interview and be fact-checked and look stupid is gonna, like, at the worst, nobody changes. When she comes on and looks dumb, best case scenario is some people become less interested in voting for her, look into her more. The reality is the majority of voters, Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative, progressive, alt-right, whatever, they're not voting with fucking any actual backing behind this. But my point is, ultimately, is getting this woman on TV is journalism. It's good journalism. I'm a free speech absolutist, basically. You fight bad speech with good speech. You fight bad speech with more speech. All of the cliches. This is exactly it. This woman gets the platform, quote-unquote platform. She goes on the platform, but that's, to me, different than what people mean when they say you platformed her. Letting her go on the platform and look like a moron is not detrimental to liberals. Now, stopping her from having access to your TV station can allow her to be become a martyr, become the face of a cause. And I think that's got potential to at least increase voter turnout. And ultimately, we should all know what our elected officials believe. She shouldn't be allowed to go and address the worst of her supporters in silence and never have to face the music. Who's going to give an interview with her that's fair? Like, what's better? She goes on 60 Minutes and gets pushed back and she gets made to look stupid by having her, like, hypocrisy and lies put on the screen during the interview? Is that better? Or is having Tucker Carlson or a fucking conservative news outlet lob her softballs and then cheer while she hits them out of the park? What's better? Because it's not doing the thing on 60 Minutes is not going to stop Ben Shapiro, Tucker Carlson, any of these guys from interviewing her in a way that's favorable and allows her to actually grow her audience. None of that's going to stop them. And then finally, I will say, so I guess that's my thing, is like I'm glad that, and I think fucking liberals should be glad that, because I think she sucks. I think Marjorie Taylor Greene sucks. I think there are good conservative politicians, relatively good anyway, as good as you can be in that position. I certainly think there are people who, I'd like to see more people have the courage to break away from Donald Trump rhetorically, but I feel the same way about Joe Biden. Politicians that are falling in line behind Joe Biden. I would like to see more pushback against Joe Biden. But I guess my ultimate thing is like, this is fucking journalism. This is what it actually should be, is it's perfectly legitimate to have a U.S. elected official on to talk to them about the dangerous rhetoric that you believe they are putting out and to correct their memories as they pretend not to remember some of the bad shit they've done in the past. So I guess that's like a free speech issue from like a freedom of the press thing. I also think like, I don't think that necessarily Marjorie Taylor Greene should be banned from anything speech wise, because again, it's like take her off Twitter. What does that do? It just fucking, it circles the wagons in a smaller and smaller circle, and it allows her to kind of grow an angrier fan base in obscurity. So the other big story of the week was that Bud Light, Anheuser-Busch, announced a partnership with a trans woman named Dylan Mulvaney, who I wasn't aware of before this. They put her face on cans. She's doing ads, I think social media ads for Bud Light. And at least two conservatives, I'm sure many more, but Travis Tritt and Kid Rock have spoken out. They've been, the Kid Rock one is crazy. I guess I probably should have waited until Monday to talk about this on the live stream, but he starts his video out. It shows like a Carolina blue MAGA hat, and he says something and then goes, "Fuck Anheuser-Busch," and shoots a bunch of Bud Light with an AR-15 type gun. I don't know if it's an AR-15 or if it's, but it's in that category. Black semi-automatic rifle. Whatever the fucking argument is about what to call that thing, it was a black semi-automatic rifle. He shoots a bunch of beer bottles and says, "Fuck Anheuser-Busch," because Anheuser-Busch sponsored a trans woman. That's it. Trans activist. And trans woman, but a trans woman. That's it. They didn't say transphobes don't buy our beer. They didn't say fuck conservatives. They didn't do any of that. They just gave money to a famous influencer to open up a new market for them, potentially. I guess but the thing that's frustrating to me is, if you believe in free speech, and if you're a conservative or a libertarian and you believe in free market capitalism, and this corporation chooses that the market wants this. Again, they don't say NASCAR needs all their drivers to be trans. They're not saying that. Budweiser's not. Anheuser-Busch is not. They're not close to saying that. There's no slippery slope that ends with every pit crew has three trans women trying to change, or three fucking drag queens trying to change tires and heels, okay? That is not an outcome of this endorsement. This is them saying, we accept you, and also, more than anything, we think we can make money off of your likeness. Trans lady, Dylan Mulvaney, whoever the fuck you are, I'm so fucking old. And if you believe in any of those things, freedom of expression, the First Amendment, if you believe in free market capitalism, these things that many conservatives claim to believe in and claim to be better on than the liberals. And by the way, I think the liberals suck on free speech. They suck on it. They have a bad recent record of supporting or not supporting free speech. They suck. They suck. But when you're losing your mind, telling Bud Light you're going to boycott them simply because they chose to sponsor this trans woman. They put her picture on cans. I have to assume you can find, maybe you can't buy a Bud Light can right now without getting a face full of Dylan Mulvaney. I could be, but I do, I mean, you don't have to buy the beer. Also, they made that decision knowing there would be backlash. That's like this, shouldn't this be, this is like free market capitalism at work, is what's the argument gets made with your dollar, right? So shut the fuck up and stop trying to infringe on another person or organization's free speech. Shut the fuck up and stop trying to regulate free market capitalism, as many conservatives and libertarians think we need in this country. By the way, I also don't necessarily think that capitalism is horrible. I saw a thing today or yesterday that was like, I mean, of course, the person who posts it ends up being someone who I'm like, I don't know how they got into my Twitter timeline. I don't follow them. I don't even remember who the person was. But they end up being like, you know, right-wing wacko. But you'll see they quote tweet, they nutpick, as was the parlance of like 6 years ago. But they nutpick the most insane communist woman whose argument for communism and how capitalism sucks is basically, if you are in a commune and you get cold, you're going to start cutting wood. We are still going to work. Everyone's still going to work because we will need things and we will want things and we will work to get those things. If you're cold, you'll chop wood. And then a person quote tweeted like, if you're cold, you'll chop wood. If you need food, you'll grow your own food. If you need meat, you'll grow and butcher your own cattle. And if you need complex antiviral drugs, you'll develop those also. The point being, capitalism drives many of these things. Capitalism fosters, creates an infrastructure for many of these things. You don't just get the meat industry and feel how you want about it, but you don't get the meat industry in a commune. Maybe you catch, or you eat what you can fucking catch or hunt, but you don't. There's no, and frankly, this is the thing to me, is it the reason I know that the communists like this lady are just playing fucking house in their mind is that imagine an America where overnight we suddenly we're all living in communes, and it's just trade, it's bartering. Well, first off, I don't know if you know another group of people that did something like that, the Native Americans. Quite a bit of bloodshed between those folks. And when you're a, you know, 30-person commune in a resource-rich environment and people around you are struggling, they will fucking, if they're struggling enough for long enough, they will eventually flatten you and take everything you have. And imagine an America where we became a series of small communes, how quickly this evil country, Russia, if you believe that, you have to believe that an evil Russia, if we put down our arms, we stop having metropolitan areas, suddenly we're a series of communes and bartering and money has no value and work has no meaning unless it's doing something to help you and your commune. How quickly would Vladimir Putin fucking flatten that country? It's not realistic. It's a fucking fantasy. This idea. Is capitalism full of problems? Of course it is. And by the way, nobody believes that that's what we should be doing, except for the most insane versions of, and of course those are the people who get a bunch of play on social media because that's who gets shared, just the most insane people. Okay, I think I had my say. I've had other stuff to talk about over the weeks, but I've lost steam and interest. Monday, noon Pacific time, first live stream of Nobody Likes Casey McClain. On my YouTube, on my Facebook page, on my Twitter account, The Casey McClain. Eventually, I'll be streaming on Instagram, hopefully. Poor Sports Podcast, please check it out. Also, thecaseymcclain.com for stand-up dates. And the big one, my last headlining gig, very likely, June 25th, Tacoma Comedy Club, the new location on 6th and Proctor in Tacoma. Come on out. Please, it's a small room. I need some people there. It's going to be the last headlining show before I become a father again. Thank you for listening to this podcast. I'm sorry it hasn't been coming out very often. We're going to fix it, baby. I got nothing to do during the day anymore. Actually, that's not true. The other thing I'm going to do is clean the fuck out of my house. We're going to be the home I live in is going to be cleaner with less shit in it. A lot of dump trips. My wife and I were basically full adults when we moved in together, have never recovered from bringing two households worth of shit together. So we're going to throw a lot of stuff in the garbage over the coming months. Thank you for listening to this podcast, and I will talk to you later.